Okay. So could you tell me your name, your address and date of birth, please?
Trevina Jones, date of birth 18/5/49. Did I say that in the wrong order?
5/18/49, is it?
Yeah.
You said in the American order, didn't you? Yes. So tell me a little bit about your background, where you were born, your father, your mother, what they did for a living, and any siblings, that kind of thing.
I was born in Neath. My father was in the forces and my mother was a nurse, so we did a lot of travelling around. I have one brother, one sister and one sister that's passed away.
Right. And did your mother work at all?
Yeah, she was a nurse.
Oh, yes, you said. Sorry.
In Llandoch Hospital.
Oh, right. Okay. So, tell me about your education then, where you went to primary school, secondary school, that kind of thing.
I can't remember much about primary schools. I was in a different primary school every year, every 2 years, so I can't remember much about that until I moved to Penarth, and then I went to St Cyrus School.
Right.
So, but primary school, there were so many, I just didn't keep her.
Right. So, how long did you stay in school then? When did you leave school?
16.
Right. Was that something you... Did you want to leave at 16, or would you have liked to have stayed on?
I ummed and ahed about it. I only ended up with 3 O-levels, so I thought, well, that's it, I will... leave. And because I was sort of heavily involved in gymnastics then, I wanted a job that I didn't have to worry about. I just wanted something to earn some money and not think of anything once I closed the door. So that's why I ended up in J.R. Freeman's.
Okay, so tell me about that then. Did you know anybody who worked in Freeman's before you went to work there?
Not at all. Didn't know a soul.
So why did you decide to go to Freeman's?
Because the money was very good and it was just somewhere where I could go, do a job, not worry about it and just come home.
Okay.
So, no, I didn't know a soul.
So, when you went there, did you have to have any kind of interview or?
We had an interview and an IQ test, and it was quite formal, really. Considering it was a cigar factory, I thought you would just walk in, but no, they had their. You had to do their tests and you had to be well dressed, and so it was fine, you know. I didn't expect the IQ test, I must admit, but yeah, so that was fine.
Oh, that's interesting, isn't it? Why do you think they were doing IQ tests?
I've no idea. They just I said, to make sure you're not that much of an idiot, I suppose. I don't know. But, no, they... I don't know if they carried it on or what, but I know when I started, it was an IQ test.
Right. So did you go there straight from school then, when you were 16?
Straight from school.
Do you remember what it was like when you walked in on the first day?
Actually, I can remember going in and, first of all, you had to go not into the actual factory itself. You had to go to, what's their names?
HR?
HR, that sort of thing. I knew H, I couldn't think of the HR, and report in there. And you had a little walk around the factory, and then there was all departments that you would go into, and I ended up in the making department, and there were five of us started in the making department, and I remember all this noise, all these people. I'd never heard so much noise and seen so many people all together, and they put me down in the training department where the others were learning how to work the machines, and I just went there and just helped people if they wanted this, a fetching person basically for 3 weeks. Right. And
so were you trained at all to use the machine?
Yes, I was trained after about a year, not a year, sorry, after about a month that they put you on the machine, you had a little go, and then after about 6 months you could do the job with your eyes closed. It was that sort of a job. No, you had to have targets, you had to get so many cuts out of a leaf, so it was all sort of a controlled, but from that, you know, and there were some very clever girls there, you know, that had just come out of university and couldn't get a job. Freeman's was the place where everybody could get a job, and they loved it. Some stayed there, some never left, you know, they just got on with their jobs, and, you know, degrees, it didn't worry them at all. They were there, and after about 2 or 3 years, I think they just thought they'd never get back into the workforce. And,
like you say, it is a job you could shut the door on, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a door you just shut the door on, and it was very, you just what, the hooter went, you put your card in, walked out of the door, and that was it. To the next morning, put your card in and click on again. So it was, but a lovely atmosphere. It was, they were a great bunch of girls. When I first started there, I was a bit shocked. They had rollers, some of the girls had rollers in their hair, and I just thought, God, look at that, you know, nets on the hair, rollers in. And they'd stay like that all day and then go home, take the hair out and go out for the night. But as things went on, I would say after about working there for 2 years, all that stopped. I don't know why, nobody ever said anything, but it just seemed to stop. So, yes. That's about it.
The hairstyle changed.
Hairstyles could have changed, yes, I don't know. Perhaps they weren't so bouffant in
beehive.
This. Yes.
Yes, yes. Because that would have been, you went there about 64, didn't you?
Yes.
And then by about 66, it was more like straight, long
straight
hair.
Straight hair, yes. So that could have been the reason why they didn't come in with their rollers in.
Yeah, yeah. So tell me then, what exactly did you do?
Well, I started off as a machinist, and then because I was there for so long, and if you sort of, your machine broke down, or there was no filler, or there was no leaf, they'd put you into different jobs. So some days I would go in there and they'd say, oh, this week you're in the stripping room. And I'd go in and make a terrible job of it, but I'd try and strip the leaves, and then you'd go quality control. Well, would you do quality control? And then, oh, packing room. But basically, I was a machinist, but a jack of all trades.
There we are. Take me through a day's work as a machinist. You know, what Well, you could say from when you started in the morning, what time did you start?
Started at 7:30 in the morning.
And you clocked in, you said?
Clocked in the morning, go to your machine, sit down. Sometimes you had another person at the end, which was called your buncher, and I was the roller. And they'd have a little chat. I think, what's the target today? And you'd start, the music would start playing, and machines would start up. The buncher would start up first because she had to bring the cigars into you to put the top leaf in. And you just rode and rode until break time. You go for your break. I think it was 20 minutes. Have your break. Come back in and start the process all over again, singing your head off to the music if you could hear it, chatting to people, whatever's going on. The mechanics might come around and say everything fine. You might say, no, this isn't working, that isn't working. Fine. And then lunchtime, again, whole floor would switch off, and each department went separately. So the stripping room would go, the making room and the packing room, all different times. And you just go in, have your lunch, a good chatter, and start back to work. And if you were near your target and you think, right, you start slowing down a bit now, and you'd have, go out for a couple of breaks, have a cup of coffee, do this. But if you were behind and there was a spare girl floating around, you'd say, Susan, can you come over here and have a go for me while I go to the toilet or have a coffee break? And it would fill up there. Then about 3:30, machines would start to close down, and you would clean your machine. 4:05, looking at the clock, thinking, right, 4:00, knock off time, and back home.
So you were actually rolling cigars, were you?
Yes.
Right. And the machine would... How did that work on the machine?
That worked on you had a die in the middle, and you had a cigar leaf, and you just... You had a bunch of leaf, and you just pick your leaf up and roll it on the die. An arm would come across, cut it out. Another arm would take the leaf over to behind where the actual bunch, as they used to call it, would be in the back. Roll it around. Arm would come over, take it across. They would all roll down, then you would pick them up and put them in a tin. I think the tin held about 500. And it would be like that all the time.
What's a bunch then?
A bunch. A bunch is, we call them buncher, is where the filler, you have a machine and there's a filler. And all the tobacco would go in there. Buncher would have her little bit of cigar leaf, not good quality, not as good as quality as the actual top leaf, and she'd put it on her die. The filler would come up over, the die would cut, go across, fill it in like a cigarette, roll it all up, then go into... be passed over and put in, well, the buncher then would pass it over and put it into the drum, and that would go around waiting for the roller to roller it. So it was, you both had to work at the same speed. If you didn't work at the same speed, you weren't...
you were out of sync.
Yes.
Yeah. What's the die then?
The die is the actual sort of cutter. You have a silver plate, and in the middle there's a die where you sort of put your leaf over, and it depresses when the roller cuts. The arm comes back, and it is like a cutout, and it just cuts out and sends it to the back. Gosh, I didn't think I remembered all this.
So what was your target today then?
A lot. I can't actually remember. Say 500 in a tin. About 10 tins. So that's
5,000.
5,000.
Oh. Oh. And were these the mannequin cigars, the little mannequin cigars?
Mannequin. Then the bigger cigars, the Falstaff, is it?
Oh,
Falstaff
right.
Cigars.
Yeah.
Those. Bigger ones again. So if your machine was broken, then you'd go to the next machine, whichever
right.
you
but
did.
On the whole, you had the same machine then?
On the same machine,
right,
yes.
Right. And you said, can you explain then? You said sometimes you'd have to go to the stripping room.
Yes.
Yeah. What happened in the stripping room?
In the stripping room, the first time you just go in, they give you a bundle of leaves and they show you how that you get the leaf. It's two sides of the leaf, and you get the vein, and you pull the vein off and wrap it round your hand, and then you have a right leaf and a left leaf, and you have two different, you have your right and your left leaf, and it was quite complicated. It was a technique to that. When I used to go in, they say, oh my God, here she comes again. Because I just ripped the leaves to threads. But actually, in the end, I got quite good at it. But, no, it was fine. And if I was moved then to quality control, where your tins are made on the actual floor, they would take over to quality control, and that's where they were called boarders, and you would board up this thing. You know, they would take them out of the tin, roll them out on a board, check for any faults, and if they had faults, they were given back to the machinist, and if there was more than five, you were in trouble. And sometimes it was something that you didn't really notice because it was a machine fault. So you do that and you just board them all up and you just keep counting. And they must have been counting thousands and thousands a day. Because if you think one person was making 5,200 in a room, they just were constantly up. They'd take them out, put them on the board, count them. I think there was 25 in each, if I can remember, 25 in each section. So there'd be 50 in a row. And then they'd just board them all up and send them off to be dried into the
air. Right. That's fascinating, isn't it? Yes. So, do you remember how much you were paid? As a kind of basic wage, and then how much your bonuses? Did you do piecework and bonuses? Did it work like that?
No bonuses. You had a bonus at the end of it, which was for everybody. So it was just piecework, just flat rate. So if you knew you were going to reach your target, then you either said to yourself and your partner, right, we can make another 1,000 today, but we'll keep those for tomorrow and have a easier day.
I see.
Tomorrow. And it all depends on how good the team were. And sometimes because we finished early on Friday, you'd keep a few back every day. So Friday you'd go in and practically do no work, because you would have reached a target every day. But I think they cottoned on to that in the end. But in my day, that's what we did.
Right. Do you remember how much you were paid then when you first went there?
£4.70, I think. And just go home, give it to my mother, have it all back by Monday, you know, that sort of thing. But no, £4, and that was an awful lot of money in those days. It was
in 1964. That was a good wage.
That was a very good wage, better than all my other friends that were working in offices or anything like that. That was good.
And did your wages go up every year?
Every year the wages went up. And with inflation and above, it was a very well paid job, very monotonous but very well paid.
How did you feel about working there?
To be honest, when I first worked there, I thought, oh my God, you're working in a factory. Oh, you shouldn't be working in a factory. There's a lot better things you could do. And then I would listen to all my friends saying what they were earning. And I just thought, I can go out and buy myself a dress every week and go to town. And what am I working for? For the love of it or for the money? And I decided I was working for the money. And it took me about 5 years to really admit to people that I worked in a factory. But
did you feel that other people looked down, you know, upon factory work then?
Yes, I did. The first few years I really did. They'd say, where do you work? And I'd go, oh, up on Half Road. And I'll just change the subject. As I got older and I thought, well, I'm doing a job, I'm getting paid, and I think my confidence grew. And I should say, in the end, the people there were from all different backgrounds, all different abilities. University students to people that just didn't have an O level, you know, but everybody just got on, and it was a great feeling.
So was there a good camaraderie there with the other women at work?
Yes. People say about bitchiness in factories. I would say one thing, well, I never noticed it, it was a great time. There was always something going on. There were always people telling jokes, and everybody there would help anybody. You know, if you didn't have any much money to go on the bus home, they'd say, oh, right, oh, there's this shilling there. Somebody else would say, oh, I've got a shilling. They would help you out more than any office people would think.
So where was the factory? Do you say this was the one on
Penarth Road?
So this was the new factory, was it? Because there was an older Freeman's factory, wasn't there?
Yes, this is the
Yes. So where exactly on Penarth Road was it?
Right in the middle, J.R. Freeman's. It took up quite a lot, next to some garages that were there. I haven't been to Penarth Road for ages now. Right. But
the bottom bit, is it? The where the garages are now.
Yes. Yeah. It wasn't part, you know, where the, I don't know if it's still there, you know where the post office used to be? And just a little bit further down from there.
Right.
And it was...
How many of you worked there, do you think, when you worked there?
Oh, I don't know, thousands I would have thought. All in all, you've taken it on everybody, thousands.
And was it mainly women?
Mainly women. The mechanics were men. The charge men were men. That did change towards the latter. It was very hard to get on an upper scale if you want a man in Freeman's, first of all. Women were women, and they had to be on the machines or whatever they were doing, and it was all men that were in charge. In the end, that did begin to change. We had charge women. I think there was one woman mechanic, and higher up, the bosses used to, one was a woman, but it took a long time for that to happen.
Were the men paid more than you were?
Yes.
Yes. And were you aware of that? Was it something that bothered you, or did it come to bother you? You know, because you were obviously a skilled machinist.
To begin with, no, it didn't bother me, but in the end, I just thought, why are they getting paid more than me? Once you've been on your machine for a while, you could fix it yourself, you knew what they would do, and they would just float around all day with a screwdriver in their pocket, and just go sitting down, waiting for something to happen. And there were a lot of them, you know. Like, they'd be in charge of four machines, five machines. And all they would do is, right, the machine did go wrong, they would fix it, or they would have to then call a fitter. I think the mechanics weren't qualified mechanics. They were just odd jobbers, if you know what I mean. They held a screwdriver, they could tighten a few knots, they could loosen a belt, but if the machine really went down, then they called the fitters in that would have to come then and repair it. But the mechanics, in the end, I thought, why are they getting paid a lot more money than us? But
right, were you aware, were there any time and motion people in the factory, or didn't that apply?
Time and motion, yes.
Oh, it did, right.
Yeah, time and motion did apply. We all worked to time and motion, and that they'd come round and check, and everything had to be should I be saying this? You would work much slower, and to the book when time and motion came around. Like, if there was something wrong in the machine, well, if you were quick, you'd just get in, take it out, and carry on working. But when time and motion came down, down would come the handle. You'd get up from your chair, you'd go around the machine, do what you'd take that piece out, come back, sit down, check everybody all right, yes, put the handle back up and start again. But, and you'd, if you want to get your leaf out, you'd stop the machine, open your drawer, take your bundle out, make it flat, smooth it. All things that you were supposed to do, but nobody did. You know, not actually when you're on the machine, you just kept the machine going all the time. And yes, they used to time and motion the mechanics. Never seen them walk around so much. They'd be there, come, everything all right? Yes, oh, that doesn't look quite right there. But that was about...
With you, were they the ones that set the targets for you every day? You know, how many cigars you were supposed to make?
Yeah, I think that the machine is set at a certain pace, so they would know how many cigars that could turn over a day. Whether you could keep up with the machine or not, that was immaterial. But actually, you had to meet this target. Some never did it. You know, some were always up in the office. They couldn't meet their target. They couldn't do this. And there was a lot of dropouts because they just couldn't meet the targets. It was just like, oh, no, not another telling off, not another...
What would happen to them if they consistently didn't meet their targets then?
You were fired.
All right.
I think three warnings, okay. And or they would take you off a machine and try and find you a job in another department that wasn't so quick. But most of them then just they'd go, oh gosh, I'm up again, I'm gone tomorrow.
Right. Was the work dangerous at all? Were the machines dangerous at all, for example?
Yeah, so that there were a few fingers lost. Doing things that you're not supposed to. As you say, you've got to produce so many. And you would say, right, say a machine was rolling and you could see that was stuck there. If you timed it right, you'd just go in, pull it out and just throw it away. But there were many a girl that lost her fingers.
Do you remember that when you were there?
I remember one girl in the machine next to me in a Falstaff machine. She was doing and she was trying to clean something out. And blade just came across, or the machine got stuck in the jam and it just cut two fingers off. Yes, it was it was dangerous work, and it wasn't dangerous work. You know, if you stuck to the rules, then you were fine. But it could be an arm could just come over your fingers. Say you put that leaf on and you left your hand there too quick, an arm could come over and roller it. That was usually just a pinch or a bruise. But for usually, if it did, it would bounce back. But sometimes your hand's a bit lower. No, there are a few bruises and fingers lost.
What would happen? Did people have compensation for that if they lost fingers?
Don't know. Because they would go down to the nurse, or the ambulance, no, they'd be taken down to the nurse, into the hospital, and we'd never see them again.
Oh.
No. This one that was sitting, I'd never seen her again, so... I don't know.
Oh, that's really sinister, isn't it?
Well, yeah, no, I've never seen her again. Whether she went to another department or what, no.
Were you unionised in the factory?
When I first went there, there was no union in the factory. After about 2 years, there was a union that started up, and I did join. But I did come out of it just before I left to get married. I just looked at them and I thought, this union is, it became a management union. In the beginning, it was for the workers, but as it went on, I just got so disillusioned with it that I just dropped out.
So, were there any disputes there?
There were a few disputes, like too much noise. I think we walked out once, too much noise, and then the heat. It got so warm in there that once it reached a certain temperature, we could all, what we did in the beginning, reach a certain temperature, the union say, right, all out, to it all cooled down, all machines were switched off, and then we'd all go back in. But things changed, the coolants came in and the sort of air conditioning, but those were about the only disputes that I would could.
And the union at the beginning sorted them out, did they?
Sorted them out. So they would go round and just say, it's too hot in here, they can't work in these conditions, calling them out. And after a few years, as you say, things did start to improve.
So you say it became a management union. What do you mean? It sided with the management more, you think?
Yes. It definitely, to me, it just wasn't a, you'd say, oh, I can't remember such things, but you'd go and say, oh, this isn't working, this isn't right, fine. And they say, fine, bring it up at the next management meeting. And you'd never hear anything back. It was always, everything from then on was done behind closed doors, and I don't know, it just wasn't for me in the end.
Yes. What union was that? Do you remember what it was?
Must be something like training of tobacco and no, I don't know. I can't remember.
Tobacco workers.
Yes, union, something like that.
Yeah. How did you get on with the men in the factory? How did the women and men get on? Was it okay, or was there harassment on either side?
I can't say that I was harassed. But there were some men that just fancied the women and that would just keep going up. And, you know, that they would be reported and they'd say, oh, so-and-so just won't stop, he's just asking me out all the time, I don't want nothing to do with it. But there again, nothing much was done about it. They would perhaps call somebody in, but a week later it would be somebody else would be harassed. Mind you, it was the same with the female side as well, that they would say, oh, God, he's lovely there. And they would, you know, start trying to chat them up and that sort of thing. So it worked both sides.
Yes. Was it more than the chatting up? Was there any physical harassment going on? I mean, both sides now.
I didn't see it, but I heard about it. You know, on both sides, yes. It was fine. But I didn't see it, so I can't really say. But it definitely was going on.
Yeah. What kind of women worked there? Were you all young women, or were there older women and married women?
Well, when I started there, I was young, 16. There wasn't that many youngsters there at 16. So I think I was nurtured quite a bit. Then So they were all 19, 20, and a lot of older women that I was quite surprised at. You know, they were, I was expecting to see a room full of young people, but they weren't. They were very young, in their 20s, and then the married ones, and then the older ones who had been there for years. I think they must have transferred from the old factory to there.
And do you think the older women, did they come back maybe after, you know, do you think they came back after they'd had children? And
I think a lot of them did come back after having children. I don't know if Freeman's was a very good place for having time off. Again, if you were late or you didn't turn up three times, if you were late or you didn't turn up three times a month, you were sent to the office and a warning. And if it continued for 3 months, you were out. So if they had children and they were ill, I don't think Freeman's was a good place.
They were very sympathetic.
No, they weren't sympathetic with time off at all.
What about you then? Did you need time off for your pursuits? And how did that work?
I did. I worked a lot. I'd go in, I'd be completely honest with them, and actually before I took the job, I did say to them that I was involved in sport and that I may need a bit of time off now and then. I might throw a sickie every now and then, but I would say to them, oh, I'm going to Cardiff Sports Centre today, and Harold Wilson is going to be there, and I said I've got to be there, I've got to be introduced to him, and they would fall over backwards. I used to do lots of things like that, thinking, oh, an important thing, and I think, who's going to be there? And if something's important, I just keep throwing that name in, and then I was let off.
Right. So was this unpaid leave then? You'd have then.
Unpaid leave, yes. Yeah. They wouldn't.
Right. So you, in a way, then you were able to go to sports meetings and.
Yeah, I tried to negotiate, but no. If I had an hour off, it was an hour off pay. If I had a day off, it was a day without leave. Did get into trouble once though. I went on a youth holiday in Denever. Remember Denever Gardens?
Castle in.
That's it, yeah. We used to stay there. And the television people came around and they wanted to interview people of all different backgrounds. And I was selected and I had to talk about Freeman's. Well, I was only about 18 and I'm very young, and any case, got back to work now and it was going to be on the television. So I said to one of the bosses, I said, could I have the morning off, please? I said, I'm on television at 9:30. Or 10 o'clock, talking about J.R. Freeman's and my work. They went white. They said, what did you tell them? Oh, I just said, just things that happen in the factory. Oh. So they said, yes, you can have the time off. I didn't know that all the bosses then were sitting in their office watching. Well, I told him about the antics that we got up to.
Oh, dear.
You know, they had just big things that are full of filler, and how you when they're empty, jump in them and race round all the factories and things that we used to get up to that we shouldn't be getting up to. Well, I got back in. I was quite pleased with this performance that I'd said. I did say good things about it as well. And all I said, yes, but they edited it. Oh, you missed the things. I said, it's the way it was edited was the trouble, but I did get into trouble for that.
Oh, right.
But it was good.
So, but what about holidays then? You talked about your unpaid leave.
Yeah.
How much holidays did you have a year?
2 weeks.
And did the factory used to shut down, or did...
Not when I was there, no.
No, right. No. So you could choose, could you went to have your holidays?
You could choose, yes.
Yes. And what did you do with those 2 weeks?
I either went away with a gang of girls from work. We'd go off to Butlin's or Porthcawl. I can remember going caravans down there. Or if I needed it, I'd use it for gymnastics and go away with those. But that was it. I think we shut down for Christmas. I think it was Christmas Day, Boxing Day, and I think you were back in work the next day. No New Year's Day off, no New Year's Eve. It was just those days worked.
What about Easter then and the other bank holidays? Did you have those off as well?
Easter. It would be the bank holidays.
Yes.
No Easter holidays. You'd have the bank holiday off, so it'd be the Monday, back in work on the Tuesday. Unless there was overtime and you'd wanted to go. But 9 times out of 10, we had the bank holidays off.
Did the company used to arrange any kind of trips during the year, or in the summer, you know? Did you go on company trips?
I can't remember company trips as such. But they did organise social events. We always did one a month, a social event. It was always it's a knockout, skittles, a dance, whatever, dart team, whatever. There was always something going on.
Did you used to join in those?
Oh yes, it was a good time. It was a very sociable life, you know. It was really was nice. There was always something going on.
Right, good gang of people there.
Yeah, male and female. You know, the ones that joined in were absolutely spot on. Everybody went out for a good time and was great, and lots of these things were subsidised by Freemans as well. So Skittles, you'd go up there and all you'd have to pay for it was perhaps if you wanted a drink, but the food, the actual hire, the place would all be put on.
What about Christmas time? Was there a Christmas party or a dinner and dance, anything like
always
that?
Always a dinner and dance. That was usually coincided with Miss Mannequin, the beauty contest, which always caused trouble every year. You had your ones for it and your ones against it, and that's what any time anybody nastiness never got around. But it was a good night on the whole. But again, everything paid for. You'd go out the top rank or a hotel and be very, very nice.
And Freemans would pay for that, would they?
Freemans would pay for that.
Right. So why were people for and why were people against Miss Mannequin?
I think some thought, well, what she got that I haven't got, but wouldn't put themselves forward. There's always a bit of jealousy. But a lot of people there, believe it or not, just they didn't like to see women in bikinis and bathers. They just didn't like it. You know, there was some of the older generation. But I think it was stopped after a few years because it just wasn't the thing to do. You know, the women on the floor didn't think it should be done. So it was stopped.
Sorry, excuse me a minute. Right. Oh dear. How did you feel about Miss Mannequin then? Did you think it was okay, or did you think it was a waste of time or frivolous? Or
I thought it was a waste of time, but I just laughed at them and just going down, and if one of my friends had entered, I would cheer them along, but no, I didn't really agree with it, no. It was just...
Yes. Why? Who started it? Was it the management who started it, or, you know? And why do you think they...
I don't know, because it wasn't... It only... It started one year. I can't remember when. But I think it only lasted about 3-4 years. And then it stopped. Well, it must have come from management. It must have done, because it wouldn't have come from the actual floor.
Right. And who went in for it? Was it the girls from the floor? Was it the office workers? You know, who... Did everybody go for it?
All of them. Anybody that wanted it...
Right.
...entered.
Right.
Yeah, so, you know, some... You didn't even know, because they were from all departments, and some from the offices, and you wouldn't know 3/4 of them.
Yes.
So,
yeah.
I don't know how they were, what, they weren't selected, you just entered. It was that sort of thing.
Can I just ask, did you have to wear a uniform or overall for work?
Yeah, a green overall. Like a penny, sort of put it on. It had short sleeves and a tie around.
And was that provided by the company?
Yes, that was provided by the company.
Right. Were you, you know, you told me about the injuries, but were you ever made aware of health and safety issues there? You know, how hot were they on health and safety, do you think?
I don't think they're very hot on it at all. Not in the beginning. I know. You know, I would go perhaps into the filler room, and you've never heard as much noise in that room. You couldn't hear each other speak, and it wasn't until after the unions, when it first started back up, got involved, because they were losing their hearing, that they started to wear these muffs. But in the beginning, then it was really, really bad, and they were always going in there and measuring the decibels, and but the, there wasn't many women that worked in there. I think 4 and about 4 men at any one time. But the noise was deafening. It was just this huge, about as big as this house, machine, just making filler, grinding everything up.
Do Do you think it affected your hearing at all?
Yes, I have been for... I've got a hearing aid upstairs. Can't hear the television very well. And it has affected my hearing a lot. I think they did start to wear earmuffs as I was finishing, but they did go into the sort of like fermentation room. They did end up having earmuffs on there, but for the making room, it was years before they started to wear them. They just said it wasn't loud enough. But I would have thought many people have lost hearing for working in that sort of description of pitch.
Mm. And you said they played music as well, did they?
Yes.
On top of that.
So that had to be blasting out, because that to cover the music. Plus the girls then would be singing to drum out the noise of it. So it was just a madhouse, really, of just noise.
So did everybody sing?
Most people sang, yes, and then the odd one didn't, but most people just sang along to the...
Do you remember, was it records or the radio? Do you remember?
I think it was the radio.
Yeah.
Yes, it was the... I remember all different songs would come on, yes.
Do you remember what the songs were?
There was Sonny and Cher, About Time, yeah. You Wear My Ring, that sort of era.
Yeah.
And everybody would just sing along to it.
Do you think it helped with the work, that kind of, that singing and...
Yes, it was monotonous work, and anything to break that monotony, you did. Good or bad, you did it. But no, it was fine.
Great.
Good.
Were you allowed to talk while you worked, or was it impossible to talk because of the noise?
You shouted.
Mm.
You just... you couldn't talk like this. You wanted to talk to your partner there. They did away with those in the end. Your partner there used to bunch. You'd literally have to scream, how many you were done, and you'd literally scream at each other to hear. But then they did away with the buncher, and then it became a mechanical one. So in the end, you're just stuck on a machine on your own. And
with even more noise then.
Even more noise. Mm. But, no.
So, were people allowed to smoke in the factory?
Not on the factory floor, no, but in the canteens and in the rest. No, they couldn't do it in the snack bars, and I don't think they could in... Yes, they... No, they couldn't in the canteen. They had smoke rooms.
All right.
And you had to go in, and it was a little box built in where people went in to smoke. I never smoked. I only went in there once with a friend. Oh, fumes, absolutely terrible. And they had one or two of these in each department, and that's where everybody smoked. So when you think about it, even though it was a cigar factory, you could smoke, but they didn't give you the opportunity to smoke much, apart from these rooms.
That's quite forward-thinking.
Yeah, it was. that, if you think that's what they're doing now, and these pubs are just building into shelters where you can go in and smoke, and that's what they did. But then they did away with those, and it was, I'm positive it was a no-smoking factory. I think more or less it wasn't for health reasons, I think it was for safety reasons.
Yeah.
You know, if anything happened, then the factory would
the whole
go up, yeah. So it
the whole supply of tobacco would just...
would go, yes. It would fumes for everybody then. No, it wasn't for health reasons, it was for health and safety, really, of the factory.
Yeah, rather than... The
yes.
Yes. But do you think they were? Do you think they were good employers on the whole, or were they bad employers? What's your feeling about them now?
I could say that they were good employers, and most people that were there would say that as well, because the ones that most people stayed there for years. It wasn't just, you know, there were the few that came and went, but the majority of the people stayed for years. So I would say they were good employers.
Was there a kind of family feeling there, do you think?
Yes, there was, you know, it was...
Did you feel sort of looked after in a way?
Yeah, you were. You know, if you had a headache, you could go down to the nurse and say headache, and... That there was beds where if you were really ill, you could lay on there until you felt a bit better, and you were sent home if your temperature was high enough or you were really ill, and they would then say, how are you getting home? And they would take you home if you were ill. But yes, we were looked after.
Right. How did you get to work, by the way? Where were you living then?
I was living in Penarth.
Yeah.
I caught the bus in every morning, which I paid for. But there was a lot of people that were bussed in from the valleys that all came in fine. But no, because we weren't living that far away, we just came in by the bus. But there was loads that had special buses.
Right, and did the company pay for those buses, do you think? For the valley buses? Were they company buses?
I think they were. I'm not sure whether there was so much taken out of their wages a week, but it was very minimal. You know, I think it was a minimal, I would say like 50 pence. Well, yeah, 50 pence a week, 10 shillings a week. That seems a lot. Yeah, but I think it could be that. Because they were earning good money, so...
Yes.
And you could never... They couldn't get back and forth to Cardiff for that, for...
No, right. No.
No.
See, yes. Yeah. So, were the facilities good on the whole, then, do you think?
Yeah, canteen was very nice. Even better, but much for the men, the charge hands.
Did you have different canteens?
Different canteens. The floor workers were in the big canteen, and the charge hands, the foreman, had another, and the office workers had another room, and management had another room, which was silver service. Yeah, it was all that. Then it was your charge hands, your foreman, your training instructors went into another room, which was wasn't silver service, but you were served. And in the normal workforce, had to queue up in the canteen.
Right.
Yeah.
So was the food the same, do you think, or was the food better?
Food was different. Definitely different.
That's appalling, isn't it?
Yes, it was appalling. You know, the food in the canteen, don't get me wrong, was fine. It was edible. It was quite good. But then you'd be standing in the queue, watching them go from the kitchen with a dome of beef and all the trimmings all going, you just think, oh God. And that would be with the chow chans and the foreman and things like that as well. They all had better food than us. Whether they paid more for it or whether they didn't pay for it at all, I don't know.
No.
But when I moved, when I got married and moved down to Port Talbot, Raymond's, I did 2 years there, that was a different kettle of fish.
So there was a Freeman's in Port Talbot as well, isn't
Freeman's
there?
In Port Talbot as well.
I didn't realise that, you know.
Didn't you?
No.
No, there was a Freeman's in Port Talbot, and there was the old factory, and then they built this brand new factory, and a lot of fitters, the charge hands, the foremen, all moved down to Port Talbot to get things going properly. And I never fitted in Port Talbot because when I got there, I knew all the bosses. Or because I was with them when they were just floating around, putting a bit of filler in or sweeping the floors. And, of course, I just... They go, oh, look, hello, Trevina. And I go, oh, hello, Mike, how are you? Fine. And they never... And I don't think they liked it either, because I knew where they came from. Mm-hmm. You know, they were quite snooty in Port Talbot. And it was... No, that they didn't like that I knew where they started from.
Right.
And we've all got to start somewhere, haven't we?
Yeah.
But that was...
So did you take on a different role later? I mean, did you train or were you a supervisor? Or?
Never wanted to be. Oh. Never. I was asked many a time. But there again, it became more responsibility. And because I was involved with sport, I wanted to take my days off when I wanted to take the days off, and if I could, and if I had that responsibility, I couldn't. If I was in charge of a group of women, I can't just say, oh, I'm going off to London today. So I just didn't bother.
So how long were you in Freeman's in Cardiff?
In Freeman's, 16. So I was 16 and I got married at 28. That's
12, you're right.
Yeah, 12 years. And then I moved down to Port Talbot and I did another 3 years there.
Right.
So it was about...
That's a long time.
A long time.
Yeah. Did you keep in touch with your friends from Cardiff?
Yes, most, well, not all of them, but my close friends, yes.
Yes, and do you still, and are you still in touch with them?
Yes, we don't see each other very often, but Facebook, email, phone, we you know, always keep in touch. Because they were a good group of girls.
Did you make friends when you came to Port Talbot as well?
I made acquaintances. I didn't make friends in Port Talbot.
Right.
I made acquaintances.
Did you, after you left the factory. Did you ever go back and work in a factory again?
No, never.
No, right.
Never.
So looking back then, how do you feel about the time you spent working in the factory?
I enjoyed it. Sometimes it was hard work, sometimes it was very easy, but most of the time it was quite enjoyable. And as you said, it looked, they looked after you, really.
Did you find the work boring though?
Oh, ever so boring. Oh yes, I used to sit there. Gosh, and if I had an exam coming up, I'd be sitting there reading the book, you know. So I passed a lot of time like that, as long as time and motion went around when you see me reading them. But you could...
An exam for your kind of alternate career here, your gymnastic
yes.
career, was it?
Yes. Yes. Or, to do lots of different exams. And so I was able to do a lot of that in work, because if you did your job well, nobody bothered you at all. And I was pretty good at the job, and I would just get on with it and cause nobody any trouble. And it was a nice time. I say for the first 3 years, I was embarrassed about working in Freeman's. By the fifth year, I was fine and about it. And I went on to do youth work and other things after that. But I think that time, I learnt a lot about people. You know, I learnt... You learned how to mix, how to adapt to different people. It was a good learning curve. But I found it a good learning curve in any case.
Great. Well, thank you very much.
That's all.